This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you have that one piece of clothing you keep going back to, no matter how full your closet is? Having a versatile, high-quality favorite feels great, but having a whole closet of them feels even better. American Giant puts the quality, durability, and comfort they're famous for into everything you need for your spring days. From premium t-shirts and jeans to lightweight French terry joggers and their legendary best hoodie ever. Whether you're dressing for work, the gym, or happy hour, you're sure to find your next closet go-to from American Giant. And it's all made in America and designed to last a lifetime. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back! T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast is back for our second season, bigger and better than ever. Seriously, though, this ish is huge! I'm your host, T-Pain. Every Tuesday, join me and my guest and my co-host for action-packed, hilarious, inspirational conversation. That's right, we're doing T-Pain Tuesday. We got the biggest guests, new drinks, new games, and crazy studio vibes. You already know what it is, and here's Nappy Boy Radio, baby. Listen and subscribe to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. Season 2 is available now, everywhere you get your podcast. You already know what it is. Come on through.
Well, in this episode of CarCast, we'll give you a whole update on the Velocity event we did over the weekend, which was really quite spectacular. I think you guys will enjoy it. Also, F1 world champion Jenson Button is going to join us. First, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Get it on. Welcome to CarCast, Matt Kroll. It's Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello, how are you?
Just back from the track.
Yeah, I just saw you.
Yeah,
just here.
Running, working and running. So we had a interesting time at the track. Good time, good group, good run group. Got the B sedan 2.5 Trans Am group together. I think 24 cars. All told?
I want to say 24 at the beginning and maybe 22 by the time race day came along. So, yeah, it was a good group. One of the larger groups, but still really good and fun and competitive.
Yeah, the Velocity experience was really nice. They set up a big pavilion pretty much the middle of the straightaway.
That, drivers and VIP lounge was it's cool as shit. Like, that's the way to do the event. They did such a nice job in having the – you can sit there and watch the straightaway, and then across the way they had the big screen, the big projector screen. It was set up so great.
Yeah, on the other side of the racetrack was a big 20-foot projector screen, so you could watch the cars go by, and then you could follow them all the way around the track, which was kind of nice because, you know, normally – you pick a place to sit, you get a quick shot of the cars zooming by, and then you kind of have to wait around to see what happened when they come around again, you know. So there was, there was a couple of interesting situations. There was the Ford Escort that guy was hauling ass in, went straight off the track at turn 6, which is sort of climbing up. It's where you climb the hill to the corkscrew. I saw that guy's tracks. They just went straight into the wall.
I understand that rung his bell a little.
Yeah, he was moving good. It had the twin cam engine in there, the Lotus engine. Is it not a Lotus engine?
Oh, maybe Cosworth?
Cosworth, twin cam Cosworth with the slide fuel injection, mm-hmm. which is just an awesome look. And that guy was moving good. We heard that that car was like aluminum bodied and went to Ford and got all re.
He's a Ford engineer, a Ford designer, and got some work done on the car back in Detroit and brought it back and a cool piece. And he was really fast. And then just something broke on it. I don't know if it was like a tie rod or.
I heard it was steering something, just exited turn six. And like I said, I could see by the tracks straight. Normally, you know, guys hang a tire there. Sometimes guys hang two tires there. Yeah. Sometimes guys kind of spin out there. But this was two straight tracks going into a tire barrier that was a good distance away.
Yeah.
So he was probably hauling ass. That's the exit of that turn is a pretty fast turn, and you're on it, and there's also, you know, pretty good sized rumble strips that you're supposed to kind of aim for on the inside of that turn. And I'm guessing he hit the rumble strips and maybe hit a tie rod or something
and knocked loose, yeah,
and he just ended up going straight into the tire barrier. I guess the front of the car got pretty dinged up.
You're just kind of it's the worst thing to break, right? Because there's no control. You don't have much braking force when that front tire, one of them, is just kind of flopping around like a broken limb. I mean, if you lose a fuel pump or ignition or something, you're losing power, but you've got car control,
mm-hmm.
theoretically.
Yeah.
And he didn't. So super bummer. Here he's okay. But the car is a little bit damaged. But man, just what a great event overall. They did this great job of, similar to Goodwood, where all of the cars were kind of lined up in the paddock area in a tent with little storyboards. And I know it was maybe throws off some of the teams because they don't have their whole rig. They just got to haul out some of the tools and stuff. But mm-hmm. for the most part, it was a better experience for the spectator to be able to just walk down the aisles and see. They ran the groups in order. It looked like the groups were almost lined up on the field in order, like in the paddock area. Like you could see group one, group two, your group eight, and group nine. And they kind of peppered in these really cool display. So as you're walking around the field and you're looking at the race cars, you'll see the fake lawn thrown down, and you'll see a display with, you know, John Morton's original, you know, 510 that the mm-hmm. Nissan Museum brought mm-hmm. out. You see some really cool car show displays, Gunther Works and Zinger. And in between some of the racing sessions, that's some exhibition runs. You know, Tanner Faust was there. Mario Andretti was there. I talked to Tanner. He drove the McLaren F1, that Gulf liveried F1, and he drove Senna's Formula One car.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, that was a fucking dream come true. He's like, that thing is so crazy.
Yeah, like a 93 F1.
Yeah.
Super expensive ones. Yeah, and yeah, they laid it out nicely. People were under tents. They did a couple things that were cool. They put all the run groups together on the same side of the tent. If that was your run group, then you're amongst your run group.
Yeah.
Which is nice because you get to talk to the drivers that are in your race. Eventually, you end up having some nice conversations, a little camaraderie. If you need some advice or a spark plug or something, it's all like-minded sort of cars that are there.
Right.
So
you don't have to go roaming around in a golf cart trying to figure out where the other guys are or your friends
are.
Yeah,
because you know, normally they scatter everyone to the wind. And when they scatter everyone about, then the guy next to you's got a bug-eyed Sprite, and the guy next to you on the other side's got a Cobra. And then if you need a spark plug, that's no good.
Right.
But if you're sitting in a sea of 510s and you need a little advice, or you need, you know, how much tire pressure should we run, or hey, what do we gap these plugs to, or some version of that, there's a dude next to you who knows how to do it,
yeah.
and who has a spark plug wrench that you don't have.
And it worked out because everyone is going to grid up at the same time. It allowed some of us that weren't racing to jump around to the other drivers and go, hey, well, let me help you with your Hans device. Let me make sure you're buckled in. And the grid, I guess, how would you explain it? But the grid wasn't on the track,
right?
Which you can't get to unless you're part of the crew and you have the wristband. So they set up this aisle with this little, like, whatever, 3 foot high white picket fence so you can see.
With some hay bales.
Some hay bales so you can sit and watch.
It was really just to give it a kind of period Goodwood look. But what they did is, and I didn't even know you could do it this way, but what you do, yes, you normally grid up on the track.
Which most people can't see.
Most people cannot see. The crew can get there, and maybe if you're up top in the Mazda luxury suite, you can look straight down and see something. But the crowd cannot see the guys sitting in the cars, getting ready, firing up the cars, you know, the whole sort of foreplay before the race. But what they did is they just carved out a big aisle down the middle of the place. I mean, it was toward the front, but it was back a couple hundred feet.
Yeah.
And normally when you grid out to go out on the track where they normally do it in front of the track, you go out and you turn right and you then turn hard left. And this time you just sort of went straight out and basically turned to the left and you got onto the track, which was nice.
But it was great to see, like, again, from the spectator standpoint, they can grid up the cars, you know, 10 minutes early. Some of the people can get out of the car, say hi to people. And as spectators, you can line up and see the entire grid. You can hear them all fire up. You get the whistle 1 minute, you know, heads up. You get the whistle. They all fire up the cars. You see the pace car lead them out. It's a cool experience to see all of that.
And it's really helpful, even though this sounds dumb, when they say your run group is going off at 2:40 in the afternoon and you're in the far corner with Kenepa.
Yeah.
And he's got his Trans Am car next to you. And then 917 on the other side, you're not going out with him.
Right.
So you're sitting there and you're going, well, it's 2:25.
Yeah. Are they running late? Should I get in the car or where?
And then at some point, you'll spot a car from your run group go motoring by and you go, oh, okay, I guess we're going. But there's always a little anxiety there because you don't want to get there and sit in your car for 20 minutes. On the other hand, you don't want to be late. So you end up, when you paddocks, everyone at the same time in the same place, then you'll see your group heading out. And, you know, for me, it's usually by the time there's, you know, 15 cars have left and there's five cars behind, it's time to start heading out.
Everybody's warming up the cars at the same time. Everybody pushes them out a little bit and fires it up. And that's kind of like, oh, we got the 10 minutes heads up. Everyone's warming up the car.
There's information. You walk around. You go, are they running late? You'll talk to another driver. But generally, when you see the drivers in your run group starting to climb into their car and get situated, it means it's time for you to do it.
I know they make the announcements, but it's tough to hear when you've got 21 F1 cars on the track or the big bore Trans Am cars on the track. Like, you can't hear anything. You can't hear any of the announcements. I agree with Gordon McCall. He said they need to blow out a text to everybody at some point. You know, so even if you don't get it, you're right. 15 other people in your group did get it, you know?
Yeah. So good group. One run on Friday. Sorry, two runs on Friday, one run Saturday for qualifying. And one run on Sunday, which is the feature race. I went out with the stick shift pattern backwards in my head, which was it was harder to get out of the pit because I was in third gear.
You're in third gear. I was like, why is he stalling out? I was like, ah, it's fresh car.
I was on the track when we stalled and it was time to take off, and I put it in reverse.
There was a guy
right behind me. Yeah. I started to let the clutch out and started to go backwards.
So the reverse pattern is reverse is one up where first gear is, and first gear is down where second gear would normally be. So when you're leaving...
I was leaving in second gear, I guess.
So the 1-2 shift, if you imagine this, the 1-2 shift is from your waist in one, and you're pushing up toward the dash for two. It's not the you don't pull
yeah,
for one, two.
You don't pull.
By the way, if you were drag racing, that would be the worst.
So I thought my new Comp 2 transmission was the opposite. I thought first gear was forward. We've been moving here, and it's been a complete madhouse,
it's
an utter madhouse. It was all we could do to find. I got to the race. I didn't have a cushion in my seat.
Yeah.
The seat cushion on a race seat pops out.
Yeah, it's Velcroed in.
Yeah, it's Velcroed in. And for some reason, we popped it out and put it in another car or something. But it's just looks like a blue seat. No one checked. We didn't have the transponder. We didn't have anything.
Yeah.
So it was all we could do to make it out there. But then the shift pattern, I was like, all right, I know what this is. When I got out of the car after running Friday's early session, I was like, man, what the hell's going on with this transmission? And I turned a semi-decent lap time, considering in my head I was in third when I was in first, and I was like, Matt, the second gear is so low. I was in first gear.
But on the slower corners, when you're trying to get into first, you're like, I can't ever get it into first. Because you're trying to jam it into reverse. I'm surprised you brought it back in one piece, honestly. If you would have forced it into reverse, it would have made a lot of noise.
No, I was forcing it into second, but I was really in first. Yeah. That's why I thought it's so short. It's so short, I kept saying. But anyway, so I was confused. But I figured it out with the help of Jim Frula, I think.
Yeah. He's like, no, that's all wrong.
That's all wrong. And so we figured it out. We have one lap from Saturday, the start of the
qualifying run.
The qualifying run. Now, the start of the qualifying run is you will how it's not about turning a fast lap. It's however you finish.
Right. Okay.
Which makes it fun, because every once in a while, one of the really fast guys up front, car 1 through 5 or something. Every once in a while in these races, not every once in a while, almost all the time, some really fast guy has some overheating problems and he pulls off the track in lap 5. Then the next day, when the actual race is on, that guy's in the back.
Yeah.
But he sorted out his overheating issues,
and
he's just coming up, and he's pissed.
You could see by qualifying came around, we figured out the shifting issue, and he had a massive sticker on the dash.
Yeah, so my plan was to be in first gear probably like 5,500, 6 grand RPM, and if I could hold it there before I had to grab second, I could launch at the start. So this is going around as the pace car pulls off. So everyone starts to.
So you're in
grid.
First.
I may drop it. I may drop it into first. Let's see. No, that's first. I'm just keeping it in first. So I caught it perfectly. So everyone's just kind of dicing around. In the second for the turn, here it comes. Guys hanging tires. Always someone getting a little dicey on that turn number 2 around there. There's Dave Stone in front of me.
Yeah, he's quick.
Me turning in front of somebody who didn't want me to turn in front of them. I missed the gear there.
Missed the gear.
Gotta get used to that transmission. Now this is turn 6, where the guy went off the track. He just went straight right there. Turn the corkscrew, which never
second.
Never had a problem, and then you gotta grab third quick. This is the scariest corner to me. Pretty much just rode it up to $8,000 in third gear there. Turn at the beginning of the hairpin. That's a lap. It's kind of intense.
Yeah, that's a good lap. Because you see the traffic up front right off that grid.
Yeah.
You could see it's a little nerve-wracking to see because in the camera, we can't see the mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
So when that guy comes in and on your left side on the inside of turn one, we don't see him. Maybe you do, or he hopes you do.
I got to get one of those fisheye. A lot of guys use the fisheye mirror out there, and I should, because the miniature little outside thing doesn't really provide
much. And you just need to see, a flash of color in that mirror to know that there's somebody there. You're not, with all the vibration, you're not necessarily going to, make out exactly what's there, but you just need to know that something is there.
But it was a fun run group, made it through, finished 10th out of 24 on the weekend, so... It's nothing to write home about, but it's better, a little better than halfway up. Good group, good race for the win. The 2002 versus the 510.
Yeah,
Rob and Jim were going at it
pretty hard. Yeah, BMW and the
Datsun. If that Ford didn't go off the track, I gotta believe that thing would have been
right up there. In qualifying, I think Rob in the Datsun had Jim in the BMW by like half a car. And I think on the race, Jim beat him by a little bit. But those guys are so nice and they're so good and they're fast.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, credit to those guys because they go there, they manage a bunch of other people's cars, clients' cars, and then they get in and race as well. And then as soon as they get out, they got to attend to their clients.
Right.
Yeah.
And they say, I did a 146.99999 or something last time I was there in that car, and then I did a 151.1, maybe 2. Anyway, doesn't matter. So I was like, that's slower. But I think a lot of people saying that the lap times are a little bit slower because they've got to resurface the track and everyone is – I've heard that a few places. I didn't fully understand it.
I don't know what some of the other guys like before and after lap times. Like, what was Rob's lap time, or 2 years ago?
I don't think that. Well, yeah, I can tell you that everyone in the middle's lap time should have been more in the 148 range instead of the 150 to 151 range.
Yeah, okay.
Normally, that group is below 150 lap times in that group. I mean, the last one I did a 146 and, came in ninth or whatever it was. So
yeah.
If I could turn a 146 last weekend, I would have bumped up six spots.
Right.
So
the 146, was it in the other 510 or this?
No, it was in this one.
Yeah.
And that was the only run. That was the only clean run I had because we had the carburation.
Yeah.
Issues, air filter issues. So I think in the general consensus, and we were talking to Gordon McCall about this, he said, like, tomorrow they're going to start resurfacing track.
They were going to get on it right away.
They're going to tear it all up. So I think, maybe I'm just making excuses, but everyone's sort of thing is like, the track is old, the track needs to be resurfaced, and the times are down a little bit. Because we're right. Well, that's the last event before the resurfacing.
Yeah.
So I don't know much about racetracks, but
just go with it.
They're resurfacing it for a reason.
Yeah, right. Makes sense to me.
So that was the general consensus. But good guys, some 510s, a fun VW Beetle out there.
That thing was fun to see. Not the zippiest car around there, but It caught people's attention.
Well, Steve, the guy who was driving it, is getting around that track about as fast as you're going to do in a VW Beetle. I will say.
It was great because he was just by himself on that straight and just flooring it and making noise, and it was looking good. And then the yellow came out, and it took a while to get the whole group bunched up. And on the straightaway by the bridge where the flag bearer is, there was a car that was stalled and pulled over, and they had it hooked up to the truck, and they were going to just make a big U-turn. Mm-hmm. So they waited. They had it hooked up. The whole group came and passed, mm-hmm. and they waited for a second going, where's the VW?
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, ah, fuck it. We're just going to make the U-turn. And then after they make the U-turn, still 10 seconds later, it just seemed like the VW comes firing down. They were all fine. It was just like, even under the yellow, it took a minute for this little car to catch up, but that guy was having the time of his life.
Yeah, cool dude. Talked to him for a while. Fun group, nice guys. And those guys can all drive their cars. That's what I will say about them.
It was a good field of cars, not just your run group. Like, they did a nice job curating this event. There was some really, really cool stuff out there. And I know that when you and I walked by the Capri with the really cool Ford engine with the cross ramp, and we were talking about it. It's like you and I were sitting with Gordon McCall, and like, did you guys see the Capri? We're like, yeah. We're like, I got a photo of the engine. Like, so did I. And Gordon's like, so did I. I was like, of course, because it's awesome. I just posted it up on social media when we got home, and I was just like, coolest engine we saw all weekend. I was like, that's all I wrote. This is the best engine there.
Yeah, it's a four cam V6 with cross ram injection,
like
slide injection with like great stacks. Great. I can't remember if the cams were run outside on the belt.
They were. Yeah.
Just a lump, man. Yeah. Just the coolest lump. And it was a funny thing. Like, you know, you're dealing with car guys because Gord McCall loves cars and you love them. I love them. And at the end of the day on Sunday, we're all just sitting out having a glass of champagne watching the last races of the weekend. And I probably said, do you see that Capri engine?
Yeah.
I sent it to Sean and everyone pulled out their phones. Everyone just took a picture of that engine.
Everybody already had a picture of it. Yeah, I put it up there in the comments for exactly what we thought. People were like, yeah, you're right. And the people that knew what it was were like, you're right. Coolest engine out there.
I wonder if that's a 3.35. It's not a 4.
No, it's not.
It could be a 2.8.
I thought it was 3 something, and then Gordon said so too. Yeah, 3. I don't remember.
I think those Capris had a 2.8 in them back in the day. But I don't know if that thing's been bored or stroked or whatever. But, yeah, everyone parked their trailers in the dirt parking lot in the back of the whatever. Everyone was great. Good turnout. Pretty crowded on Saturday. A lot of people walking around with their kids and their wives and stuff.
It was getting there. By no means is it the Rolex reunion, but it's getting a little better. I mean, I watch some of the YouTube stuff, and when they fly the drone over, you kind of get an idea that some of the grandstands were a little light. But, you know, it's a new event, and it's going to grow. They're going to do some cool things with it. And huge credit to Jeff O'Neill. He's a wine guy that decided to roll his profits into this event for fun. So God bless that guy. He put on a hell of an event.
Yeah,
it really is the closest thing that we got to sort of merging, you know, the Rolex Historics with Goodwood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was well thought out. There were some things there that we really liked that I don't know would work with the Rolex, because the Rolex is so big and there's 550 cars racing. I don't know if you have that much space.
There's a big car turnout.
Yeah.
For this event. I mean, they had. I was in run group 8. They must have had 10 or 11, and they're all pretty well populated.
Yeah.
There weren't, you know, what Rolex has, sometimes you go out there with like 42 cars or something. It's a little too much. The perfect amount, they had like 20, 22 cars in a lot of these, and they were just going for it, and it was fun.
And they did it on purpose, because when we spoke to them from Velocity on the show a while back, they were trying to cap the run groups to a certain size. They didn't want it to be overwhelming and dangerous. And look, a great outing for the different drummer 510. It basically was flawless the whole time. Like it showed up there, it ran, and we brought it home, no problem. You drove it off the track into the trailer. You went up and around, and, yeah. And I mean, you couldn't ask for a better outing for that car, for any car.
No, and everyone loves that car. It's just the livery's great.
Yeah.
You know, the 510 guys, you know, really appreciate that car, and it's got its brass tag and its history. And, yeah, it worked flawlessly.
John Morton got to go out and do some, not the parade laps, but kind of a pace lap in the original. You know,
he paced Saturday's qualifying in the 46 510 that Nissan Motorsports owns.
Right. I thought he brought you out on Saturday for the race. And then I think Pete Brock was in the yellow Z, the modern day Z.
I think, but we could figure it out or not. I think the modern day Z was the race car day, was race day, was Sunday. I think the qualifying race, I thought that was Morton's car that went out there.
Hmm. We'll have to check it because Morton and Pete were talking to each other on race day, and Morton had the racing suit on and he was up front.
Race day or Saturday?
It was race day because Pete was only there.
Oh, well, maybe they both did it on race day.
But anyway,
on
cool
Saturday.
It was cool to see. And
yeah, that 46 car is the holy grail for all 510 and Datsun people.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what that car is worth, but I'm heard it's insured for a lot of money, if that means anything.
Well, and there are always little bits and pieces of stuff. Like when I was looking at that car, you and I noticed a big, long aluminum tube going through the car that was about an inch and a quarter.
Yeah, it looked like radiator hose size. You know, it looked like a coolant line.
It
but
was
it wasn't
like
a
conduit that was running through the car. And so we said, what the hell is that? Because, you know, there's no cooling in the rear of the car. Mm-hmm. So we looked at it for a minute. And then I said, I think the fuel hose, that's fuel.
Yeah,
because fuel you could see the other lines weren't going to the right places. And I said, that's fuel. But it's not fuel in that wide thing.
It's just,
it must be fuel line in it. And so then I said to John Morton, what's up with that? Because you don't see that in any other 2.5 Trans Am car, B sedan. You don't see that piece of aluminum conduit popping out of the back and going all the way through the firewall. And they said, as a regulation that we had to run the fuel line inside of something like that, like a protective thing. And I said, but I've never seen that in any other car. And he went, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, there you go. Good answer.
Because I mean, we have put our head in 200,000 B sedans from back in the day and never made note of that tube going through there.
Maybe
that was a Brock thing.
Or maybe it wasn't a hard line. Maybe they used, I don't know, just fuel line rubber hose.
No.
And they were like, oh, you got to put it in there. But
well,
seems
braided,
a little odd.
They would have had braided going through.
I would have thought so, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe that was, you know, we should have asked Brock because that could just be a Brock safety thing, but whatever.
But he also said he ran a different transmission.
Yes.
That was important, right? Because you're
my
like,
eyes lit
you're,
up.
You're like, what's going on with this transmission?
No, I looked down and I saw the sticker for the shift pattern on the transmission hump on the firewall side of the transmission, the stick.
Yeah.
Just a little round one. And I was like, first gear up.
Yeah.
Where
That's
does this
not what
come
I'm
from?
Doing. I've been waiting
my whole life to find this transmission. And he said, oh, we ran a Roadster transmission.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I got a few of those.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I would like to go up to first gear.
Yeah.
I don't know. People can talk all they want about how lame I am, but I am telling you, when you spend your entire life going up for first gear and then down into second, it's a muscle memory thing. And when you reverse it,
you don't want to think about it.
I look at that sticker 37 times during the course of that race. Like,
yeah,
which gear,
just to keep
where am I going?
By the way, and maybe the guys are going to go, oh, but this is the faster transmission. I go, but John won a championship with the Roadster box.
And anything's faster than me missing shifts.
That's
you know?
True. Or trying to jam it reverse,
here's
thinking it's first.
Here's a question Chris could answer without even going to the internet. does the Roadster, the 2000 Roadster Datsun transmission, bolt straight up to a Datsun L1800, or do we need a bell housing adapter? Because the 2000 Roadster is a U motor, not an L motor. That's hot tranny talk. All right. Let me, Jensen is moments away. Let me tell you about BetterHelp. That's right. Now, a word from our sponsor. BetterHelp, training your brain to stay in problem-solving mode. When faced with a challenge, well, that can be a tough part of life. A therapist can help you become a better problem solver. Yes, get your head right, people, and the rest will follow. As the song says, free your mind, and the rest will follow. BetterHelp, it's convenient, accessible, affordable, and entirely online. Get matched with one of 25,000 therapists after filling out a brief survey, and switch therapists anytime if you like. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/CarCast. Do it today for 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/CarCast, and get your mind right. All right. So, Jensen Button, F1 champion driver, should be along any moment now.
While we're waiting, why don't I tell you about this? Speed Vision is coming back. And our friend Goldberg is one of the partners on this program. He's an investor in it. And Speed Vision, the network that we love from back in the day, is coming back with a bunch of content. It's going to be on a number of streaming services like Redbox, Plex, TCL Channel, My Bundle TV, and more. You can go to speedvisionnetwork.com, or you can follow them, Speed Vision TV, on all the social media networks. But they've got some shows already kind of queued up. Now, you got to give them a little time. They're going to work on distribution. They're going to work on more shows. But Americana with Ray Abraham, and he's so fantastic. That's a show that they're bringing
back.
Oh,
I love that show.
Our friend Jensen Button's going to like this one. Radford Returns. I know he's a part of that Radford program. We'll get into it for him. I think it's a show with Ant Anstead. And Jensen Button might be hosting this show. A new version of Wayne Carini's show called Talking Classic Cars with Wayne Carini.
I like that show too.
And I want to say that Jay Ward, who's the creative director of Pixar, and worked on the Cars movies, might be working on it with him. Going Old School, Gears with Stacy David and his mullet. Graveyard Cars, Mark Warman, nice guy.
Love that guy.
Some aviation content. They're doing kind of a docu-series. They're going to get into the P-51 Mustang and a couple of other things. I like that.
Hello, Tom Cruise.
Yeah. A cafe racer program, and a number of like sort of historical things as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'm kind of excited about this. I like this idea of Speed Vision. So, you know, maybe we'll get some content up there as well.
The Roadster 5-speed can be hooked up.
Yeah, just remember this. So the Roadster 5-speed can be hooked up to an L-series engine by using an early Z bell housing.
Oh. So you don't really need a bell housing adapter. You just need the early Z bell housing.
I like where your head's at, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, that Roadster, the Roadster tranny where second and third are the same is frustrating at times, but and I'm wondering if that's the one they went with, but at least you know where the gears are. That's what I would say.
Why isn't anyone else running it? Why isn't Troy running it? Why isn't Jim running it?
All the slow guys?
Right.
I will tell you why.
Yeah.
Because they drive those cars fairly exclusively. I shouldn't say that. They're quite familiar with the car. I jump in it once every 2 years and I get backwards. You know what I'm saying? And I think if I just drove that car with that transmission in it, then eventually the muscle memory kicks in and that becomes the car. But I jump from car to car to car.
So So in theory, you're saying maybe the comp transmission is a faster transmission, but and they deal with the wonky shift pattern because they do it all the time? Or because if there's no difference, then why not just run the Roadster transmission? So there must be a difference. Yes. They all agree that there's a difference.
They all agree that they're a little bit faster in that transmission. Yeah. But let's not forget, I drove the other transmission that nobody likes and did a 146 last time I was there. So for me, maybe all bets are off. Maybe I'm better with the wonkier transmission.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, what are you looking for? Top 10? If so, then go with the transmission you love.
I would like to live in a world where first gear is toward the dashboard and I can grab second and pull it down toward the back of the car.
Maybe let Sean finish the move and give him a day or two off and then tell him
to get on it today.
Maybe before you hit him with, we're going to change the transmission again.
Yes. Jensen is parking. So
I think he's walking over right now.
Walking over.
Let's walk him in as soon as he gets in.
So I hear. So it was a good weekend. It's a fun weekend. And it was kind of nice because the town wasn't packed.
Yeah.
So you could go to a restaurant or walk through it, not have to deal with the massive car crowd.
Do you watch any movies? I mean, it's tradition to watch a terrible
movie. Yes, we watched Hooper.
We watched Hooper, which is a great movie.
Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. Jan Michael Vincent. That's two Jan Michael Vincent vehicles in a row, by the way.
Yeah. We watched
Hooper.
Watched Hooper and with Jan Michael Vincent, stunt guy movie.
Yeah.
It's great.
We tried to watch Corky with.
Didn't take.
we got to look that one up. But that is Robert.
Blake?
Robert Blake movie from the 60s. No such luck with Corky. And
we did watch Six Pack.
Oh, we watched Six Pack. That's right. We watched Kenny
Rogers. Six Pack. Ben's face is glazing over. He's never heard of any of these fucking movies.
These are some of the greatest movies of all time. Then Charles and I.
You have a homework assignment, Ben. Six Pack is your homework at Hooper.
Charles and I stayed up and watched Elvis's Speedway.
Yes, I did not.
Matt was already asleep. I know. And it was like Elvis just singing about cars, you know. It was awesome. But yes, we watched some good, bad. I mean, we saw Six Pack.
Six Pack, yeah.
And Hooper, man.
In the right order. Six Pack first, then Hooper.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you want to go out with a bang, like literally.
Yeah.
And Hooper's the way to do it.
Yeah, Hooper. Hooper's funny. Hooper's a good movie. It's Hal Needham. It's Burt Reynolds kind of at the height of his Burt Reynolds-ist. It's Jan Michael Vincent, you know, in his prime. I mean, there's a lot there.
To be fair, Jan's role could have been anyone. I mean, I get that there were casting, you know, they were casting the hotshot, you know, youngster at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not like he was super chatty. He just kind of stood there and talked a lot.
His job is to look good with his shirt off. Jensen Button, F1 driver formula, '09. I think it was '09. Took the world championship, right? Jensen?
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good to be here. It was 09, you're correct.
Got an event coming up, a pop-up store, the Williams Racing Experience, and that'll be today as you hear this through Sunday in downtown Austin. And we'll get into that. It's going to have music and lots of good names involved with this. Robin Thicke, Wyclef Jean, Jean. Shaggy. Is going to be there. And but first, thoughts on Drive to Survive. I love that show, but you live that show. Highs and lows. What do you think? A good documentation of what it's like to drive an F1 season?
I don't think we can get away from the fact that it is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a driver, there's definitely things... thank you. Just got a nice cup of coffee put in front of me. But I don't think we can get away from it that it is entertainment. But it definitely is. I think it's great for Formula One because it shows people behind the scenes of the sport that no one's really seen before. So people see the drivers as personalities, not just crash helmets driving around the circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So they get behind their drivers. So it's been really, really good for the sport, especially here in the States. I'm happy that it wasn't on when I was racing in Formula One, because I could go about my business a little bit better. And
right.
You know, now you walk through the paddock and There's a live camera everywhere. There's a boom everywhere. So you can't get away with anything anymore there.
What about the halo on the car that is, I don't know, 3 years old now? When did that pop up? I want to say like last year, but I'll say that for five seasons, you know.
Yeah, I think it was 2018, I think.
Is when it popped up. Would you have liked that? Would it have changed things for you?
I didn't like how it looked from the cockpit because I raced in 2016, did one race in 2017. So I was in the cockpit when they were trying it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like it because it really takes your eyes to the centerpiece of the mm-hmm. halo. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what it does, in terms of the safety, I think it's fantastic. You know, we've saved a lot of lives all the way through different motorsports because of that over the last few years.
Yeah, IndyCar's execution of it as well is, you know, it's definitely been a huge benefit.
I like the way they look as well, the IndyCar.
The IndyCar one, yeah. Because they got the screen and everything. And
they have the canopy.
Yeah.
It reminds me, did you ever have the F1 powerboats here, the really small ones? They used to race around harbors in Europe, and they were 120 miles an hour, and they had the same canopy.
I think we brought one here, and you fired it up in the parking lot.
Well, they had the drag boats had the canopy here with the full like ejection seat. And
those
stuff.
Are the ones like pop out like
the whole
I dream
thing
of
pops
genie.
Out. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We had a hydro fuel hydro boat, a top fuel hydro boat.
That was right. Okay, so a little different.
Yeah. So we had a drag boat here, but yeah, that's the nuttiest sport. I don't know. Maybe the tractor pull with the five blown Hemis and two of them are facing the wrong – four of them are going the wrong direction.
Yeah,
that's a transmission. I'd like to crack the case on that thing.
Yeah, I think that it's less dangerous unless you get a conrod or a piston hit you in the face.
Right. Yes.
You're not going that quick, are you?
No.
So – F1, maybe it's the Drive to Survive. I don't know. I feel like it's on people's radar here in the U.S. And, you know, maybe it's the whole Circuit of the Americas or something like that. Maybe it's just a slow build, or maybe it's sort of like soccer where we didn't really think much and now we do. But soccer was big out here in even the 70s, you know. F1 just took a while, but it's out here now. I have more guys talking about F1 here in the States than previous decades.
Right.
You know, for me, it's the reason why I moved to America. I've been here for 6 years now because nobody knows anything about Formula One. So now people are starting to realize what it is. I can't walk to the shops anymore.
Yeah.
I can't go to the grocery store. I'm a has-been, though. But, you know, it is amazing how it's changed over the years and the sport has grown. I think a lot of it is social media. But also, you know, Circuit of Americas is a great track. Austin is a great city. They put on a fantastic show. But I think Miami really is the one that's made the big difference for me. You
was
know,
that
having
first
two races.
Last year?
It was. This year. This year.
Yeah, this year. Sorry, this past race.
And what are your thoughts on Vegas? Because they're going to, you know, run down the strip in November. I guess it's coming up.
Yeah,
right?
it's a 10 p.m. race on a Saturday night.
Yeah, really? So
they're going to run it at night, and part of it is down the strip.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's kind of our Monaco, if you think about it in a weird, scary, garish mm-hmm. American way.
Yeah, we can't roll yachts up and sit on the yachts and do it that way. So,
I've raced in Vegas before in an off-road truck. I raced a trophy truck once.
Wow.
There,
yeah.
Which is a little different to Formula One. But no, I've experienced Vegas on a few occasions. And I think Formula One in Vegas, it just gels. It just works.
Yeah.
There'll also be enough hotel rooms, which is always a tricky one for Formula One.
Now, do you feel like something like Vegas is a little gimmicky, or do you think it fits? Because I think there's opposite sort of thoughts. There's counteracting thoughts coming from maybe the F1 drivers or the teams in general. It's like, what's your feeling on it?
I think circuits like and locations like Vegas have their place in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just have to be careful with the balance, that we don't get rid of true drivers' tracks. You know, the Spas of this world and Suzuka in Japan and Silverstone, those ones are what get your heart pumping as an F1 driver.
So add a Vegas, add a Miami, but not if it removes you from one of the other tracks.
Yeah, right? you need the balance, you know, and that's so important. Circuit of America is, again, a great track. Very fast, mm-hmm. flowing, high-speed corners, change of direction. Drivers love all that. So we need that still. The Vegas track, it looks all right. For me, it's more the show that we're going to put on in Vegas.
Obviously, no elevation changes, which is a big part of what a really cool track.
Unless
really
they
cool
make
track
it. Unless it's
fun.
Artificial. They start bringing out dirt like
a jumps.
Like a motocross track.
But there is something, you know, I was hearkening back to Coronado, which used to have a vintage race out on the airfield or whatever. And as plain as it is, there's something kind of fun sometimes about just racing on a, I guess Sebring would be that way. You know, there's something, Laguna Seca's majestic because of the crazy elevation changes, and it's so much fun to drive there. But there's some kind of fun every once in a while about having a big autocross race, essentially, you know, and being able to see through the, you know, you can see all the way through the circuit. And by the way, if you fuck something up, you'll hit a cone and slide off a little bit, but it's really just a cone you're going to be hitting. I mean, it's not majestic at all, but there's something kind of fun about it.
Yeah, I mean, Sebring is pretty special because it's so bumpy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an airfield, so it's super bumpy. So I think a lot of drivers like it because it's different. Every corner you get to, the car reacts differently. Vegas, though, if you do go off, you don't hit a cone, you hit a hotel or a casino.
Right.
So
That's right.
It could be a little bit scarier. Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be something like that.
What were you driving in the Super GT series when you were the champion 2018?
Well, that was it's a GT car, but it's a carbon fiber tub. So it's not actually most GT cars these days. It's a road car that they strip down and then build up again as a race car. As you probably know. But a Super GT car is a carbon fiber tub with a tubular frame, subframe.
Oh, that's where the super part comes in.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, here's a picture. So it's Honda.
Yeah, so it's 650 horsepower monster. So these things, they look like a road car. But this is as quick as...
Yeah, it's got some NSX.
Yeah, it is an NSX, yeah. So this actually is as quick as the Le Mans cars. So the hypercars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not that old. I mean, a lot of cars from Trans Am back in the 80s, you know, Camaros or Datsun Z cars or whatever it is, just tube frame, you know, some NASCAR chassis builder or something would build it, and then they just hang all the fiberglass on it. It wasn't the tub, but it's the same basic thing, which is it looks like an NSX or it looks like a Z car, it looks like a Camaro. It's just nothing to do with being a Camaro.
Yeah. So, it's the same thing, but I mean, this thing is just full of technology in terms of downforce. It's got a lot of downforce on this thing. Rear wing, but also the floor. And, you know, it was the three big manufacturers back then that were racing in Japan and still are. So, yeah, they pushed each other hard.
Is it paddle or sequential?
Paddle shift, yeah.
And, that's a nice piece. And the NSXs are nice in general. That's a good ride. But they're all... Everyone in the class starts off as a monocoque tub, and then
There are three manufacturers: Honda, Toyota, and Nissan, as you guys call it. it's the big three going at it. But the funny thing was, racing in Japan was that I came across as a Formula One driver and a Formula One world champion. And the team were very good at reminding me that I was the number two driver in the team. we were given these beautiful miniatures of the car, and they were limited edition, you know, 50 cars. Yeah. And there you go. It's Jensen, here is yours. It's number two.
Yeah.
Naoki-san, your teammate, has number one. It's like, oh, okay, cool.
Okay.
Thank you for reminding
you for
me,
that
guys.
Again. Yeah, where's his F1 championship?
And Le Mans, what'd you drive at Le Mans?
I drove, it was SMP, the team. So it was actually a Dallara chassis in LMP1. So we were never going to beat the likes of Toyotas, but 365 kilometers an hour on the straight, which is about 230 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. And that is...
It's quick. And they also said to me, don't get too close to the car in front, because this car took off the last time we raced at Spa.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's a couple of big flips historically. There was a big flip years ago at Road Atlanta there was a big flip, I think, at Lime Rock, had a maybe a Nissan GTP car back in the day, big flip, and a couple of big flips at Le Mans.
Yeah, yeah. Mercedes, wasn't it?
So drive fast, try to win, but don't get too close to the guy in front of you if you could avoid it. I was like, okay.
I believe it was Bruce Kenapa at the Rolex Historics, Matt, you might correct me on this, about 3 years ago, that may have been driving a 917 or it's like a 962 or some Porsche, whatever. I think it was maybe a 962. A windshield got sucked out.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He got too close to the back of someone at the end of the straightaway in the 962. It could have been going 145 miles an hour or something. And whatever the draft did, it sucked out his windshield.
He said that was on the previous builder. That wasn't it. He's like, we didn't touch the windshield.
So Aero,
that's all the other guy.
Aero does definitely make a difference. All right, so the Williams. Now, Williams is, I don't know, are they on hard times right now? I mean, Williams is one of the most was one of the most dominant teams in F1 for many years. Dad stepped down, daughter stepped in, had some great wins, great drivers, great history, great livery, all that kind of stuff, but have fallen down a few pegs over the last few seasons. I don't know where they are now. Is there a new regime? Is there a revamp? Are they climbing back up the ladder?
Well, I'm here to save the day. not really. A lot of people within the team are new. They have new direction. They have new ownership, Doralton Capital. So it's American-owned.
Wow.
Now, but they have a good understanding of what is needed. They've employed some fantastic people, kept the really good people within the team. Everything just takes a long time. You know, you have the funds. You know what you need to do. You have the technology to move forward, but it still takes a couple of years. So, no, I feel really good about the team. You know, they have a good lead driver now who is with the team next year as well, which is Alex Albon, and he fits in well. His feedback's fantastic. So, yeah, they're on to a good thing. It's just everything takes longer than you want it to. Mm-hmm. But as I said, they will get there, and I'm excited about that because they're the team that gave me the opportunity in Formula One back in 2000 when I was 20 years old, or 19 years old at the time. So they've always looked for new talent and tried to bring us in and helped make our careers.
Keanu Reeves and you and Disney and Formula One documentary. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, so I won the World Championship in 2009, and the team was called Braun GP. So previously to that, it was Honda. They pulled out in the financial crisis in 2008, as did a lot of teams. And Ross Braun, who was running the team at the time, he took the team over for a dollar. He bought the team for a dollar. It was still funded by Honda, but we had a Mercedes engine in the back of the car. And we won the World Championship that year as a privateer, beating all the big manufacturers.
Okay.
So the story obviously was really interesting, and Keanu decided that he wanted to make a documentary about it. So there's a lot of stories from a lot of individuals within the team and outside that haven't come out. So it's going to be interesting to see, because on the surface it's a beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful story, but there's always a dark side, isn't there? So
yes.
There's a lot of interesting stuff that Keanu's really delved into. So I'm really excited about seeing the whole thing. I've spent 3 days with Keanu already filming. He's doing all of the interviews and voiceover, so he's fully involved.
How far along is it? It sounds like it's pretty far along, almost done.
It is. It is a long. I still have a couple more days. I have to go to Brazil, where I clinched the title, and a couple of other places. But it's really, really exciting to see how involved Keanu is, and also how much of an understanding he has of the sport. You know, mm-hmm. he loves his automobiles, his bikes, his cars.
He does, yeah.
Arch, yeah.
Yeah, so
we saw him at Goodwood.
Yeah, and he drives the shit out of that bike.
He does.
Up the hill and everything. He's quick. He's super into it.
He was asking the big guys like Mick Doohan if he was doing all right. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, we don't ride hard up here. It's too dangerous.
It's too dangerous.
And there's Keanu giving it his all.
I think when the year we were there, it was maybe not pouring rain on him, but it was a wet track.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was going at it. And if he came back, he was like, It's wet. It's a little scary out there. Yeah. It's a little scary out there.
So is that coming out on Disney Plus or yes. something like that? And maybe next year?
I would like to say next year, but I don't know exactly. So I don't want to put my foot in it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's give one more plug, the Williams Racing Experience. And that'll be, I'm told the address is 800 Congress. And that's in Austin. And there's going to be music. It's going to be you. There's going to be cars. What else? What else can we say?
Shaggy.
Oh, Shaggy.
Shaggy.
I mean, come on. Do you need anything else?
No. You don't need more than Shaggy.
No.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to be in San Diego at Mic Drop Comedy. That is coming up October 28th and 29th, doing four shows there. Vegas, be a Wise Guys on November 2nd. St. Louis, Helium Comedy Club, November 11th and 12th. You just go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows. And what do you got, Matt?
Well, you can follow Jensen at Jensen Button on his social media. You can give me a follow at Moderator.
Good to see you, Jensen. Congratulations on the career after motorsports. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Jensen Button and Matt the Moderator DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
All this month, celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month with Pluto TV. Watch movies with the biggest stars like Eugenio Derbez in No Eres Tú, Soy Yo, and Luis Gerardo Méndez in Camino a Marte. Plus, Pluto TV has thousands more movies and TV shows and over 45 channels in Spanish, all for free. So download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming today. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.